This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Rota Report podcast in association with the Sunland Community Soup Kitchen. And you join us today on the back of Sunland's fairly impressive 2-1 away win over Gillingham at the weekend. I'm joined today, as always, by Martin Wanless. How are you, mate?
I'm alright. I've spent the day out in the garden. I've got a bit of sunburn on my neck and on my arms.
Sunburn in October, man. Jesus, you're lucky, mate. You're lucky.
Warm enough.
And we're also joined by Ant Watson. How's Ant?
Not bad. I'm probably the opposite end of the spectrum of Martin. I've probably got frostbite. So, yeah.
we're
going well.
It's not the warmest. Like, I've just walked the dog around the block there and sort of regretted the fact I was wearing shorts. Anyways, enough about my legs. To talk about the Gillingham game. Sunland won, of course, 2-1 away from home. Testing circumstances. I think everybody knew going into the game that Gillingham have gave us a real test over the years, and Steve Evans' teams are just generally awful to play against. And to have passed that test, to be fair to Sunderland, reflects very well on us. I think after losing to Pompey the last time out in the league, we've won the last three games in all competitions. We've rebounded very well. I think Tom Flanagan, in his post-match interview, talked, and this seems to be something that the players have really taken on board, is that like they cannot let other teams think we're a pushover, especially after that Pompey result. So, to win the game, Martin, in the way we did, I think it bodes well, doesn't it?
It does, and it's pleasing to see that response after the Portsmouth game. Obviously, we've had those two Pizza Cup trophy games, haven't we? But the bulk of the team that plays in the Portsmouth game had been missing from those two games and away in international duty. And it wasn't an impressive performance. I think we had a spell just after half time that we looked pretty good. So it wasn't necessarily an impressive performance, but it was a very impressive result. And I think it's just really, it gives you a lot of confidence, doesn't it? We just get back to winning ways after, after having that stuff in the Portsmouth. And I was concerned, like when we conceded that first goal, you go, oh shit, here we go. It's going to be another one of those days. But we responded really well. We're showing good character. And I think that's the most pleasing thing that we've developed over the course of the pre-season and shown so far this season, is we've got good character in the squad. And I think that shone through yesterday more than anything else.
Yeah, just looking at the stats, and 25 shots from Gillingham. We had the lion's share of the possession, but it was a bit of a bombardment, particularly later in the game as they were chasing the point. And I think Lee Johnson and, again, Flanagan both talked about this after the game. For some of those young lads, have probably never played in a game like that. And it was a big test, and they passed it. I mean, it's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I think you're right there, especially with, like, obviously, Serkin and Doyle, who were still, very young, still learning the game, and having to, put up, I think, Gillingham had, like, five strikers on by the end of the game, didn't they? Obviously, Kindy, who's been there and done that, a good striker. Dwayne Oliver, who's, again, another one who's, he's been there and done it. And to cope with that, especially down to 10 men, backs against the wall. Yeah, Hoffman saved us once or twice, some excellent saves. But, 25 shots and they've only scored one goal. I think that shows a lot of our steeliness at the back. And more so the determination to get over the line. That would have been a defeat or a draw last season or the season before. And it kind of shows how far we've come under Johnson, I think.
Yeah, just a quick look at the team then. So Hoffman started in goal. It pretty much picked itself, to be fair. We all of a sudden, we've just lost a load of players. I mean, we'll come on to that later, but Sirkin left back, Winchester right back, Doyle and Flanagan as the pair in the middle. Luke O'Neill with Dan Neal, central midfield, which is a fairly mobile midfield. And then in front of them, I think Lee Johnson described it as with two tens. We had Pritchard, Embleton, and then Aidan O'Brien sort of off the left playing with Ross Stewart up top. So the team basically picked itself. I mean, if you look at the bench, Burge, Younger, Wright, Hume, Harris, Sona and Wern. It's a good job we recruited well in the summer, isn't it, Martin, when you look at that and think we're a little bit stretched at the minute. And Johnson had to get his tactics right ultimately, because we knew this was going to be a difficult game. And with so few options to select from, it was definitely going to be a case of, you know, what are our strengths in this game? What can we bring to the table with the players we've got that are going to cause Gillingham problems? And I think when you look at the quality of the deliveries for the two goals, it shows. I mean, even though it wasn't our best game, we put two cracking balls into the box and scored two goals.
Well, we've gone from a situation sort of early in middle of August, late August, where the likes of Aidan O'Brien couldn't get on the bench, and he was going to be off to Doncaster, wasn't he, on loan?
Yeah.
And we've gone from that to him, you know, becoming a pretty major player, and he had a big influence on the game yesterday, didn't he? But the it just underlines, doesn't it, how important it is to have that really strong squad. And as you say, like, for the amount of players we had out yesterday, to go down there and get the 3 points, you know, you can name like McGeady, Gooch. We had so many players out. Evans, you look at those three alone, have so much experience that we really need as a young side. And, you know, to go there and get the 3 points is really impressive. But, like, the deliveries from, I'd say, from Pritchard for Flanagan's goal, that ball in was a cracking ball in. And Dan Neal's ball, in to O'Brien, remind me, can you remember that goal that Asamoah Gyan scored when Henderson put the ball over for him for Wigan?
Yeah, very similar, yeah.
It was
a
very similar ball. Like, he just whipped over it. It was a beautiful cross. And, like, Dan Neal is such an important player for us. And when we were able to get him the ball yesterday, we looked as if we were going to do some stuff. And, you know, he didn't get the ball enough. But, you know, when he did get in the ball, he was calm, composed. And he's took that opportunity, hasn't he? He's stepped up this season. And he's such a good player. I know we keep on talking about, probably shouldn't keep on talking about, should we? Should just say he's crap.
Yeah.
In case anybody's listening. But he's such a good player. And it's just nice to see that those players who get the opportunity to step up are coming in and contributing. Like, Pritchard's been indifferent, hasn't he, so far in his Sunderland career? Mm. But he showed us a few glimpses yesterday, and hopefully, you know, he can continue that on Tuesday.
Yeah. I was listening to Gary Bennett on the radio, and he was pretty blunt, actually. He said, would we have won that game last season? The answer is no. I don't think we would have either. I think that's how far along we've came, isn't it? We're now able to extract points from games against difficult teams where we just didn't have that mentality last time around.
Yeah, that's it. It's just, like I said before, that it just goes to show how far we've actually come with Lee Johnson, because it's as you say, I'm sure there was a game last season, I'm struggling to remember because it's all a blur really, but I'm sure there was a game where we were like relatively comfortable and either we got someone sent off or someone injured and it just went completely like downhill. But I mean, like I say, for these players to be so young, like what Martin's just said there, like, you know, Dan Neal, who's 18-year-old, Callum Doyle, 18, Sirkin, who's, you know, not much over that, even Hoffman, the goalkeeper, to, you know, to put up with, you know, that bombardment from, you know, Steve Evans has his teams playing this direct, you know, pretty shit hours of football, to put up with that for 20 minutes away from home on, you know, in Priestfield's not a great pitch, not a great stadium. You know, they all deserve a lot of credit. You know, I think Tom Flanagan hit the nail on the head, actually, yesterday. He says this is just completely different to what it has been. And this week could be talking about this in, say, 6-7 months' time if we get promoted. And this could be one of them results that's got us over the line. You know, it's such a crucial result, especially with all the other teams above us winning. You know, it keeps us there or thereabouts, games in hand. You know, 11 games in, and I think we've got off to a superb start.
Yeah. We'll talk about the game a bit then. So early in the game, Hoffman was forced into a couple of good saves. And then on 25 minutes, Luke O'Neill gives away a penalty. Was it a penalty, Martin? Because
it looks stonewaller.
Yeah, looks like it was a stonewaller, wasn't it?
No complaints there, like.
No. The penalty dispatched fairly well, to be honest. Straight down the middle. the keeper's always going to dive, I think. So I've always thought that about penalty takers, why more of them don't just hammer it down the middle of the... Because more often than not, the goalkeeper dives to his left or right, doesn't he? Do you think there's not really much else he could have done about that, Martin? Is there? It's
no, it would take a brave goalkeeper penalty. Just to stand there, like, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. or somebody with very bendy legs that can cover a lot of space. But then our equaliser came in first half injury time, probably about 20 seconds from the whistle going. It was a, we've talked about before, crack and cross to the back post from Dan Neal, showing his quality. And to be fair to O'Brien, really good finish, instinctive striker's play, stretched out to put it away. And Martin touched on it before, Aidan O'Brien's sort of re-emerged through a bit of fortune, I guess, or that players not being available. I don't think he would have started had we had McGeady and Gooch or DiGiacco fit. But he started the game, he's took his chance. You can't complain, can you? It's a decent finish.
No, you can't. And as Martin said, you know, he has become relatively critical to the side since McGeady's been injured. And he does help Serkan out quite a lot as well, which I quite like. You know, he gets back and tracks back and helps out. I mean, he's probably not the most comfortable at doing that. But yeah, it's a very good instinctive finish because there's still quite a fair bit to do there. It's a great ball by Dan Neal, as has been said before. But, you know, it's a good finish. Gets us, and it's a great time to score a goal in it, especially when you haven't played very well in the first half, to score just on half time. You know, it probably changed Lee Johnson's team talk quite considerably. And it probably gave us that platform to go out and win the game in the second half. So a very crucial goal from O'Brien. Thank God he didn't go in August in transfer window, because he has become a pretty critical player to us.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can doubt his work rate as a footballer. He's not shown enough, really. Mm. But I think if you've got to be fair to him this season, he hasn't had many chances, Martin, has he? But when he has come into the team, he has contributed. Like, I thought he was really unlucky when he got that hat-trick in the cup to not even, I don't even think made the bench for the next game. No, so he's been unlucky, hasn't he?
Last season he actually had a good season, didn't he, playing alongside Wyke? And I think he did an awful lot of donkey work that enabled the space for Wyke to score the goals he did. But, I was actually surprised that Lee Johnson didn't fancy him at the start of the season. You know, he praised him quite a lot last season, but he obviously sort of made his mind up that he wasn't, you know, going to be an integral part of his plans to start the campaign with. But, no, look, I think any player who comes in and takes his chance, you can't criticise, can you? And I think it's actually a testament to the work that the coaching staff had done. Like, I think it was in his post-match interview yesterday, Lee Johnson was talking about Will Harris. And he'd said, you know, he'd had a conversation with him, and someone, you know, was touch and go whether he was going to get a new contract or leave the club because, you know, it was, you know, a critical time in his career, and he maybe hadn't shown enough last season. But he said it's testament to him, Will Harris, is that, you know, he's put the work in the training ground, he's played well for the under-23s, and he's actually forced his way into the first team reckoning. But as much credit has got to go at the coaching staff. Like, they're the ones who are putting the coaching sessions on every day. They're the ones who are managing the players. And if they're creating an environment where the young, well, whether it's young players or people like Aidan O'Brien can come in and impress and, you know, be motivated to do that, that speaks volumes to what's going on behind the scenes, doesn't it? Like, it's obviously a good place to be. And I think we're seeing that with the individual performances. I think the team performance probably could have been better yesterday, but individually, they all put a shift in.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree at all with that. The other thing about O'Brien as well, I don't know if it's just me who's noticed this, but he's referenced quite a lot by other players and the manager. I think he's quite popular amongst the squad, and everyone's rooting for him there, like, you know, and that's a big thing. Like, I think it's quite clear that we've had players in the last couple of years who didn't want to be here, not mentioning any names but Will Grigg, and and just showed no intention of knuckling down and trying to prove themselves. And Lee Johnson, just before Grigg left, there was a period in pre-season with Grigg where Johnson was hyping him up and how fit he had come back, and there was all this talk about how fit Will Grigg had returned, but inevitably he wasn't fancied and he left. Whereas with O'Brien, I think it's quite clear he wants to be here and he wants to prove himself. Like, nobody, he doesn't want to leave Sunderland and people think, like, oh, he was a total failure at Sunderland. Mm-hmm. He wants to be, you know, remembered for contributing something. And to his credit, this season, like I say, if you isolate his contributions just this season, he's offered us quite a lot, actually. And I don't think he probably gets any of the credit that he deserves. he's never going to be a 20-goal-a-season striker, but he'll play a number 10, he'll play wide on the left, he'll play as a two, and more often than not, he works hard. Like, and I know, like, we should expect a lot more than just hard work. It should be a given that players work hard. But as I've just said, Will Grigg was here for 3 seasons, and I don't think he showed any sort of inkling that he wanted to be here. Whereas with O'Brien, I think he's quickly sell well, and you've got to give credit, haven't you? And when players come here and he realizes the opportunity, he'll never play for a bigger club than us again. He's coming up towards the top end of his 20s now. Mm. He'll never play for a bigger club than Sunderland. He has to be a success here, probably for his own sake, really.
Yeah, and it probably goes back to a point that was made last year. It might have been by Martin or Chris that, Ian O'Brien has come all the way up from London, probably couldn't have been able to go home on international weekends or whatever because of the COVID. Now with everything we're coming out the other side of it, hopefully, you know, he's probably been able to, you know, to go home whenever he's wanted to or things like that. And that's probably what's probably got his confidence up a little bit. And he has shown this season a lot. I think he's shown a lot more what he's capable of. I agree with what Martin said about last year. He did a lot of Charlie Wake's donkey work. So Charlie Wake could, you know, put the ball in the back of the net. O'Brien's very good at making them like little decoy runs to bring other players into the game. Mm-hmm. But like I say, yeah, he plays out on the left, you know, yesterday, you know, that's probably not his best position. I would say he's more of a, you know, a frontal player, but yeah, he'll go right back on Tuesday if we ask him to. And that's probably everyone in this squad currently now. They will do anything to get onto the pitch, you know, and play anywhere and do whatever the manager tells them. And it's so much of a breath of fresh air to see players like that who are now coming into the role. And Tom Flanagan's another one who are now coming into their own now that, you know, they're surrounded by players who want to play for the club, who want to, you know, see pride in wearing the shirt again, which hasn't been shown for the last 2 or 3 years. You know, it's just been one of those, you know, ones where people have come for the payday, whereas now we're signing younger players who are, you know, showing keenness and wanting this club to improve. It's bringing the best out of the likes of O'Brien and Flanagan. He does deserve a hell of a lot of credit, you know, because this season his chances have been a little bit limited, but every time he's played, he's probably, you know, made a goal or an assist or something, so he's doing very well.
Yeah, it's a good point you make, actually, about players playing out of position just for the good of the team, because I think Bailey Wright came on at right back, and during his post-match, Lee Johnson said he was actually going to bring on Denver Hume to play on the wing. So I think his sort of relaxed approach to just putting play, like the way he thinks is that, well, if that player's technically a very good footballer and they're a hard worker, I can pretty much put them anywhere and they're going to be able to fill a role. And that's, again, just a mentality change we've seen. But yeah, back to the game anyways. Went into the break level, Martin, probably with the momentum going into the second half, I would say. Obviously, it's crap if you're gilling them, isn't it, when you concede that late in the first half. Totally changes the team talk when they go back in.
It doesn't look.
Yeah, it's destabilising, really, isn't it?
It is. And I think, you know, nobody can really say that Gillingham didn't have the best of that first half, and, you know, they could have been probably more than one goal up. And to go in level, you know, having probably deserved to be two up, it's going to be a bit of a disappointment, isn't it? So I think, you know, I don't think we necessarily had the momentum in terms of play, but I think psychologically we had the momentum, because to go in, as you say, it kind of changes the complexion of every conversation at half time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I think we showed that in the first 15, 20 minutes of the second half. It was a completely different game. And I think, you know, I think the first half was probably one of our worst performances so far this season. You know, I think that bar for worst is, you know, bottomed out by Portsmouth. But if you take that out of the equation, it certainly wasn't one of our best performances in the first half. But I think the first 20 minutes after half time, we looked, you know, like we have done in our better games this season. We looked a bit more confident on the ball. I think Pritchard seemed to be sort of hanging out on the left wing a bit more to give us a little bit more width, and he was getting on the ball a bit. And we looked as if we really had that bit between our teeth to think, you know what, we've got away with that first half. Let's make sure we capitalise on it and don't let that slip. And, you know, for the first 20 minutes of the second half, we really looked the part, and obviously we got into the lead.
Yeah, that's the next point. Well done for helped us with my segue.
Seamless. Seamless,
the second the second goal, 54 minutes in from Tom Flanagan. Really good work in the build up, I thought, from Ross Stewart. Just he's a nuisance, and he, like, to be fair, like, he doesn't have to score to play well. I love him. He makes a nuisance of himself, plays the ball to Pritchard, who, to be honest, and Steve Evans pointed this out in his post-match, he was really disappointed with it's the fact they allowed the cross, because Pritchard, when you watch him, has got all the time in the world, put his foot on the ball and pick his spot, sees Tom Flanagan back post, and again, shows the commitment, because Tom Flanagan puts his head in the way, gets hurt in the process, but heads home, scores the second goal, the crowd go absolutely mental behind the goal, he's down on the floor in a heap, gets mobbed, just a good goal in it. Like, I think when I watched the Quest show back last night, and they were I think it was Ian Holloway, he praised just the sort of commitment from Flanagan to get on the end of it. Another good goal in it. I mean, they don't all have to be pretty, but I quite like the cross hand from Pritchard. First time, like Martin touched on earlier, we haven't really seen a lot from him, but that showed his quality, didn't it?
That's probably shown why he was an £11 million rated player. You know, it's a fantastic ball. You know, I think we've mentioned Ross Stewart as well in the build-up, which was superb by him. But just before that, there's a great tackle. I'm not sure who put the tackle in. I think it might have been Dan Neil. But there was a great tackle just before it got put back in there again, which Gillingham could have threatened to break. So, I mean, that tackle's started the move. Yeah. It's a fantastic tackle. But yeah, I mean, fair credit to Flanagan as well, because he knows he's going to get hurt there. You know, he's got, like, folded up a little bit in the air, and then he's clattered the post on his way down. I mean, it would have hurt that, and he knew as soon as he was going up there, this is going to be a painful one. But he's put his body on the line, and, you know, it's gone in the back of the net, and, you know, fair credit to him. And it was quite funny when everyone was running over to him while he was, like, you know, lying, you know, in agony on the ground. And there's only Ross Stewart who realised he was injured. It was like Ross Stewart going to the physio, how are we on? And everyone's like, get in! Which is fair play to him. Like, but, yeah, I mean, that just shows the improvement, I think, of Tom Flanagan this season. I think he's been absolutely fantastic alongside Doyle. And he deserves that goal. But, yeah, going back to Pritchard, great ball in. And if I was Steve Evans, I'd have been disappointed with my defenders for letting that ball come in. It's poor defending, but, you know, who are we to, you know, agree with Steve Evans, you know what I mean? We're happy enough. You know, it's 2-1, you know, great. And I thought we would have gone on to get a few more goals, but obviously, you know, the sending-offs changed that. But, it's a good goal, really, and a really nice header. And I'm chuffed for Flanagan, to be honest, because he's been probably our most improved player this season.
Yeah, I was going to come on to him in a bit, but I think it's a good place to talk about him, Martin. He's turned into a key player, hasn't he? Like, and I just never, ever, for the life of us, saw him becoming a key player for us. I've watched him since we dropped into this league, and not at any stage have I thought he's a good player until this season. And he's, I think with the departure of several big personalities, like Power, like Leadbitter, you know, big personalities in the dressing room, he's stepped up. He's now looking at himself and going, well, this is a very young squad and I'm the most experienced player, probably, you know, well, other than McGeady, who's been here a little bit longer than them. He's one of the more experienced players, and he's really owned that responsibility, hasn't he? I mean, like we've just said, good goal, put himself in a painful position. And the other thing I've noticed with Flanagan is that he seems to be putting himself forward for all the post-match interviews, and he speaks really well. It's not your usual guff from a player. It's, like, very honest talk. And I think, yeah, he did one on the club website, which people should check out. But, like Ange just said, Martin, he's become very important to us.
It's baffling, like, isn't it? Because you see, over the past few years, you can go, he's shit. Like, he's going to be one of the first players out. Once we get a bit of momentum going, once we're starting looking as if we're going to challenge for promotion, there's no way he's going to be in the side. And he's established himself. Is probably the first name on the team sheet in defence. And there's an enormous amount of credit's got to go to him for doing that. Like, and I, there's a few things that have happened which, you know, might contribute to it, but it is it's one of those strange phenomenons. I think if you spend too much time trying to think of the answer, you'll send yourself doolally. But, like, he's playing on the right-hand side of the central defence, isn't he, which he hasn't done before. And that's obviously his more natural side. So whether there's part of that he's actually playing in his most comfortable position. I think he might play alongside Jack Baldwin on the right-hand side, did he, for a little bit, but he's spent the last couple of years playing on the left if he's played. Yeah. And he's been put into the leadership group. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a few eyebrows raised at the concept of a leadership group when it was announced in the summer. And it's a really common concept in sport here in Australia. Like, every rugby league, rugby union, football team has a leadership group that kind of runs things off the pitch for the players. And for him to be part of that is obviously a big pat on the back for him and gives him a bit of importance in the dressing room. And he's obviously a player who relishes that and uses that as a bit of motivation as well. So I think it's enormous credit to him, because he is a completely different player. And if we'd signed him in the summer on a free transfer, we'd all be going, bloody hell, that's a good signing. Because he has just been fantastic. And I think, again, tremendous credit goes to him, and, you know, hopefully he keeps it up.
Yeah, that wasn't the end of the action, though, because Elliot Embleton flew into a tackle. And to be honest, this has caused a little bit of controversy, because people can't seem to settle on whether it was a red or not. I think Lee Johnson said it was a yellow and a half, another Johnsonism. On the post-match with Benno and Barnsley, I think they didn't think it was a red card. Johnson said, actually, after the game, that he could hear the fourth official and the linesman talking. They both said it was a yellow. I've watched it back loads. And although he flies in and with a lot of momentum, his feet are down, his studs are down, he doesn't actually really... Well, he doesn't catch the player at all. I think the player makes a meal of it, because why wouldn't he? And although we can't seem to agree on whether it was a red or not, I mean, he's given the ref a decision to make, hasn't he? And I think these days people go for those sort of tackles, even though he hasn't really done anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably on the harsh side of things, but I mean, I've put on my own Twitter, if that was on Elliot Embleton by their player, we're screaming red card.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of them ones. You know, the player probably makes too much of it. Their sideline certainly makes too much of it. You know what I mean? Steve Evans was, you know, running down the sidelines as if the bloke's leg was hanging off. You know what I mean? But
he probably saw a pie.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, but what Elliot, I can totally understand it and going in for the tackle, because, you know, he's made a bad touch. He's wanting to win the ball, you know. But we know, we've been in this league for, you know, neck end of four seasons now, and we know that these referees are not great. And the referee's got a really, really good view of it. But I think he's been kind of persuaded by the reaction of the player and the reaction of the sidelines. Now, for me there, watching that live, I thought straight away that was an absolute stormwall red card. And I don't think there's any way we're going to be able to appeal that. I just think it's... But when you slow it down, it's probably not that bad. But at the end of the day, Elliot Evans should not be making them kind of tackles when you're 2-1 up in a very, very tight game. You know, just you know, try and, like, just shimmy yourself a little bit, give him no room, you know. And it was probably just a bit of rush of blood from, you know, the lad's young, he'll learn from it. But for me, you know, I've got no complaints about the red card being given, whether it's harsh or not. I mean, I can remember last year, Gav, we commented on the Ipswich game at home when one of their lads went in on Grant Ledbetter, and it was exactly the same thing. It was just an over-the-top tackle. The players made a bit more of it. You know, Grant Ledbetter, being an experienced pro, made a little bit more of it. And it probably wasn't a red card, but we're screaming for it as Sunderland fans. So I can see both sides of it, but for me, I just cannot get away with the decision being made, because I think it's probably the correct one, given, you know, it's probably ticked a lot of boxes for the ref. You know, it's over the top, you know, a little bit out of a bit reckless, so a little bit out of control. And obviously the player and the sidelines have made the massive meal of it, so I can totally understand it being given.
Do you reckon, Martin? Do you think it's a red?
I think, yeah. I think if it was at home, we might have got away with it, but away from home...
Yeah.
And it's one of those, isn't it, where a player loses control of the ball and he comes flying in to try to make up for, you know, bad touch.
Yeah.
He's going in such pace that, you know, yes,
it's the pace of it, isn't it? It's the pace of it, yeah.
But... I had the same reaction as you.
What I would like to ask people who think it wasn't a red, what would have happened if that had been on Elliot Embleton?
Oh.
You know what I mean? And I guarantee we would have been screaming red card. Yeah. So for me, that just makes my mind up on it.
But my first reaction was the same as yours. Like, when it happened, I was like, that's a red card. Mm-hmm. As soon as I saw it. And you can slow it down, but the referee's got one look at it. And yes, the Gillingham players went nuts, but they're going to do that, aren't they? They're going to surround the referee and try to get the advantage, but I don't think we've got, you know, it might have been harsh, but I don't think there's any grounds for complaints, is there?
Steve Evans lives for those moments as well, doesn't he?
Like, doesn't he?
Him and Neil Warnock, they're just the two managers I think of whenever you think, who lives for that? They were never not going to go on the way they did, but I think you're both right. I think in that moment, when the referee's got one look at it, and it's the pace of it. If he does that, if that was a slower sort of build to the challenge, he probably doesn't even blow for it. But because he flies in at pace, he's given the ref a decision. And sadly, we'll lose him now for 3 games. I think Lee Johnson was asked after the game whether he'd appeal it. And he said, well, you can't really. How can you appeal that? It's right in front of the ref. It's not like he's really missed it. So, yeah, that's probably the end of Embleton for the next 3 games, unfortunately.
It will be. And hopefully he learns from it, because, like, as you said, it was absolutely stupid. Like, there was no need to do it. It wasn't in a dangerous position. We just got into the lead. We just started controlling the game. And, like, Elliot Embleton is really lucky if he only gets a 3-match ban, because he could have cost us the 3 points, because that was a really bad choice of... I know it's heat at the moment. You do things instinctively. But that was a really bad decision. Hopefully he learns from that, which I'm sure he will. But the rest of the lads learn from that, because he's put them into a really difficult position for that last 25 minutes, hasn't he?
Yeah, young lad who's just, these things happen, don't they? And that's the one thing. That's sort of a symptom of the fact we've got such a young team, is that the young lads are going to make mistakes, and that's all he's done. We're not going to vilify him for it. Like, it happens, happens. And I'm just glad he didn't hurt him as well, obviously. Yeah.
Very out of character as well. You've not seen that from him, have you? Like, from him. I know he likes to get stuck in, but he hasn't put, a tackle like that in before. In the times I've seen him, even at the under-23s, under-18s, I have followed him for quite a while, but he's not that kind of player. It's just probably one of them heat-of-the-moment things. You know, he probably thinks, I'm going to win the ball here, and he's missed it. And, you know, he'll learn from that, and I'm sure someone will have a word with him. So he'll be fine.
Yeah, Ian Holloway actually stuck up for him a little bit on Quest, said it just shows how committed the players are now to what's going on at Sunderland. I think he's probably right. He's extracting, this manager's extracting things from players that you've just pointed out. It's not his game, really, to go flying into tackles. So then we had to see the rest of the game out with 10 men. I think it was 67 minutes or so that he got sent off. Changed Lee Johnson's feelings and thoughts on the game up. As the game advanced, obviously, Gillingham bombarded the box and we needed to defend well. There was one moment where Bailey Wright's too easily beaten for my liking, really, in the air on the right-hand side of the box, and it's a header, which you think the forward's got no right to try and divert that goalwards, but he connects beautifully with it. Thorben Hoffman's backpedaling, and he makes one of the best saves I've seen in a long, long time to stop it going, and I don't think anybody really expected him to get anywhere near it, and he stretches to turn it over. Brilliant, wasn't it, Martin, to see that? Because I don't know, I know Lee Johnson after the game was bigging up the fact we've got 3 good goalkeepers, but I don't think, if I'm being honest, speaking hypothetically here, I don't think Lee Burge saves that, if I'm honest.
No, I think Hoffman's just sort of growing in stature, isn't he, over the course of the games he's played for us so far, and you just see, I think we said after his first game, even though he's a little nervy, you could see he had all the attributes of a good goalkeeper. And yesterday, I think, there was a couple of saves in the first half that he made, and, made some good saves. And that one towards the end of the game was phenomenal. I think it would be one of those you really like to see from a couple of different angles, wouldn't you, rather than the one angle from the EFL cameraman. But no, it was a nice save, good save. And look, that's the difference between us getting anything out of that game yesterday or not. And he can make such a difference for us this season. Yeah. Like, I think Brian Clough used to say, like, a good goalkeeper's worth 10 points to your season. And, like, Hoffman could be worth more for us this season.
Yeah. And then it got nervy towards the end, didn't it? Gillingham hit the bar and Hoffman was called in action a couple more times, but we saw it out. Like I say, it shows the character of the team. We knew what was going to happen. As we said before, Gary Bennett said it best. We probably wouldn't have won that game last season. And all in all, just a really good 3 points on the road, considering how the game went, going behind 1-0 and losing Embleton with still quite a lot of time on the clock. Brilliant win, wasn't it?
It was, and you know what? It was important, I think, to win yesterday. You know, Gillingham aren't in the best of form. You know, they're near the bottom of the league. We'd lost our last league game 4-0, so many of these players who played in that game were there. So it was important to bounce back. You know, this league's going to be really, really tight. I think, you know, you've got some teams up there, you know, who are now starting to really stretch the legs a little bit. You know, likes of Wigan won really well yesterday. Rotherham are coming into it. Sheffield Wedder are just, you know, around about 5 or 6 points off, so they'll come with a run. It was important for us to get rid of the Portsmouth hoodoo, you know, to get the 3 points. And the way they've done it, obviously, you know, going behind, not playing well, turning it around, going down to 10, relying on our goalkeeper to make, which was a fantastic save. You know, it's an absolutely crucial 3 points. And as I said before, that could be, those wins are the ones that are going to get you over the line. Winning ugly, you know, not playing particularly well, going to what, you know, a difficult team. You know, Gillingham are difficult to play. And they're always, you know, they always pull off, you know, the surprises. You know, a little bit of a spoiler team. And to go down there, you know, get the 3 points, you know, 2,000 fans scoring as well, making that journey is amazing. You know, just this club's got so much of a lift now. You know, I take the Portsmouth result aside, you know, this season so far has been so, you know, so like welcoming, hasn't it? Really successful so far. And hopefully we can kick on.
Yeah, so moving on then. We've got to get that game out of our heads, I guess. Crewe away on Tuesday. They're not in the best of form. I was checking out their results. I know they got battered off Fleetwood on Saturday, but even the results in the lead-up to that game haven't been great. I don't think they've won for over a month. And Lee Johnson, after the game, talked about it a little bit. He said it's going to be a totally different game, Martin. It's going to be... They like to keep it on the floor, do Crewe. So it should, in theory, suit Sunderland a lot more than the Gillingham game. How are you feeling about this one? Because I'm confident in every game. I mean, I was confident before Pompey and we got battered, but I think you've got to be confident going into this, haven't you, when you see... I mean, I didn't think much of Fleetwood, even though we didn't beat them, but they absolutely battered Crewe at the weekend with no reply, 3-0. So, yeah, are you confident?
Yeah, I am. I think it's, you know, it's one of those games that if we've got any serious aspirations of going up, you've just got to turn up, put a professional shift in and get the 3 points, don't we? I think the style of play that they play, it'll suit us as an opposition better than the past two away games have. And, you know, we just got to go and do a professional job. Obviously, we've got injuries. Embleton's out, so we've got to shuffle the team somehow to replace him. And there isn't a great deal of option to replace him. I think, you know, there's going to be a selection dilemma for Lee Johnson, isn't it? But
yeah, well, he talked about it after the game. He talked about it after the game and said he might have to accelerate the return of one or two of his injured players or see if we can. Importantly, he just said we'll find a solution. Like, we had a problem with fullbacks at the start of the season. We found a solution. We will do it again. And he hinted that one or two of the lads who've played well in the Papa John's games could come in. So you're probably looking at Ellis Taylor, maybe. Stephen Wern, maybe. Just because those two play attacking midfield.
Yeah.
I don't feel daunted by the fact that that's even a possibility, whereas I probably didn't previous years. I think Ellis Taylor, whenever I've seen him, looks a good player. I've got no qualms about him having to start a game in League One, none at all. And if he's struggling, you bring him off for half an hour to go, don't you? It's not a big deal.
Well, that's right. I think if you kind of look at the conversation that we've had about how individual players have stepped up into different positions, foreign positions, taken the opportunities when they presented themselves, that's been a consistent throughout the season. You know, as you say, we started the season with Winchester and Dan Neal, the fullback, and Winchester's done so well in that position, he's made it his own, and you'd be crazy to take him out of the right-back slot at the minute. So, you can be fairly confident any player who comes in, and, you know, I think if you look at it on face value, Wern will probably come in after his performances in the Papa John's. I think that was a logical replacement for Embleton. I'd like to see him given a chance. And
I know after the game he said that you want to bring Hume on the wing. Is that an option, do you think?
Cause, it could be. And I think, you know, and it really depends on how, like, tactically they see, you know, us best taking on Crewe. Obviously, yesterday the thought we didn't necessarily need the width in that final third as much as we have done previously. We could play through them. And the play, as you say, we kind of played three tens almost, didn't we? Whereas if against Crewe, we kind of think, well, actually, we need a bit more width to stretch them. I've got no problem with Denver Hume playing on the left-hand side of midfield, or left wing, because I think he's got all the attributes to do it. So it'll just be interesting. It'll be, you know, I think I'd like to see Denver Hume get back into the team and get some action. But he could do a job out there.
No, absolutely. What about you, Ant? Would you agree?
I mean, I will quickly say on Hume on Wednesday, his crossing was a lot better than what it has been. You know, I always think with Denver Hume, his crossing's his weakest link. So, but he put some nice balls in on Wednesday for Harris. So I wouldn't be bothered about that at all. You know, I wouldn't be worried at all about that. Personally, I'd like to see Wern getting a go. I think Wern's done enough to, you know, be considered now. You know, he scored in his last two games. Already scored against League One opposition, you know, albeit in the Papa John's, but it was against a decent Lincoln side. Yeah. So I would have no problem with him coming in. I think he's probably the like-for-like replacement for Hamilton, but anyone who Lee Johnson would put in there, I would trust to do a job, you know, even the likes of young Ellis Taylor, who I think is going to be a very good player. You know, whoever he puts in, I would trust to do a job there. And it kind of stops him from forcing players back who aren't quite ready. You know, to trust these young lads because they're ready to go as well. You know, like I say, the likes of Wern and Taylor will be chomping at the bit to have a go in the first team. So, you know, I would trust anyone who goes out there. And I think we should beat Crewe. You know, we should have the attributes to beat Crewe very comfortably. You know, I fancy us to out football any side in this league. And if Crewe want to play football against us, I think we'll pick them off. Like,
yeah. So what do you reckon the score will be? Then I think we'll get a pretty healthy 2-0 or 3-0 win. And I'm confident regardless of the fact we've got so many injuries. I just think momentum is a big thing, and we've won the last three games.
Yeah, I would love to see Hoffman get a clean sheet because I think he deserves one, especially yesterday, you know, saving our skins a little bit. But I'm with you. I mean, but the last time I was, you know, as confident as this, we got hammered 4-0. So I want to put a little bit of that aside. I'll say 2-0 to Sunderland. And hopefully get Ross Stewart back on the goal scoring trail as well.
Yeah, what about you, Martin?
Yeah, I'd be along the same lines. I think the thing that would give you confidence is that, yes, we've got a lot of injuries, but the back four or the back five, including the keeper, isn't affected. And it's been fairly solid, hasn't it? So that gives you a really good platform to build on. And whatever else comes in front of you, if you've got that solid base, you've got a bloody good chance, haven't you? So, no, I'd stick my neck out in 3-0. Go on.
Nice.
Come back to haunt us next week.
I know. Right, that's probably a good place to leave it. Actually, before we leave, the under-23s play Newcastle at the stadium. I'm going to try and get along to that. People can get their tickets online for that. It would be good just to give those lads who have been impressing in the Papa John's games a bit of battering, wouldn't it? And if people can get along and support them, then they should.
And you know what as well, Gab, it would be very, very interesting with that team in mind of what the first team looks like, because that will probably give you an indication of who will be, you know, making the squad and starting on Tuesday, because there's probably no way they're going to be able to play two games in 2 days, even though, you know, I think a Man City player yesterday played twice in the same day or something, like a young lad. But I think it'll be very interesting on that team. But yeah, get along. It's a derby game, you know, get yourselves along if you can. You know, it'll be an interesting game. And, you know, there is some of these players who are, you know, decent. You know, like the likes of Dice and Sean of it look good players. So it'll be an interesting game.
I think you've just made a really good point there about how that could impact on the Crewe team. Because he is going to have to, I mean, you saw the bench at the weekend, he's going to have to lean on that under-23s squad to fill out places, really, on the bench. So it might be a young team. I mean, when the under-23s beat, who did they beat during the week?
But to be fair, the under-23s beat Man United. It was pretty much an under-23 side by Denver Hume.
But then the actual under-23s game that we played in it.
It was Leeds.
Leeds, there we go. Of course it was Leeds. The team that played was pretty much an under-18s team, with the exception, I think, of one or two. Jim Adjley's probably going to play in that game. And to be fair, that's another reason I want to go along, because I want to see him play. Because if he's getting 45 minutes here and there, he's not going to be too far off a first-team return. So if people want to get along, that advisor would. That's pretty much it, other than I want to quickly get Martin's thoughts on this, because I heard you talk about it on the pod the other day, but Embleton's new contract, Martin, that's a great sign of things to come, isn't it? The fact he's signed up for another 4 years, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic.
As long as he doesn't keep getting sent off.
Well, it's some way to celebrate, like, isn't it?
Brought him crashing back down to earth.
His first week's wages of his new contract will be getting took off him.
Docked.
No, I think it's a really good sign for, you know, that he sees a bright future for the club. Like, he could easily have just sat his contract out in the first team. Mm-hmm. He's got a good reputation from last season, and he could have got a move to the Championship without a shadow of a doubt. So I think it's a really good sign that he's prepared to commit for such a long period of time. He's obviously sees it as a good place with the current staff to develop him as a player. And yeah. You know, it's great. And you know, obviously there's another midfielder who we'd like to see follow suit, tied down to a long term contract very soon, isn't it? But
one shite him, man.
I've actually heard a little rumour that he might be close to a Greeninho deal, which if it's true, then great. Like I say, it's a good sign of things to come. I mean, if Hamilton's signing up for long term deals, Dan Neal, what it does is it tells those lads who we're just talking about, who are playing in the 23s and getting a chance now, it shows them that if when you do play in the first team and you have to impress, and the thing is when you do impress, you're gonna be given proper chances and you'll be given a decent length of contract, and this is a place where you can come as a young player and get opportunities. So I think it all feeds into just this bigger picture thing where we're talking about like becoming a club that creates its own players and brings local lads through. To have your two top talents playing first team football every week and signing long term deals, that's a huge selling point from the club's perspective to be able to bring players in future generations, you know, in future years. So I'm over the moon with it.
It'll allow us as well, Gav, sorry to interrupt that very quickly, but it will allow us that if a team comes in for these type of players, because, you know, I don't think we're silly enough to, you know, kind of deny the fact someone probably will come in for Dan Neal sooner rather than later. But if Dan Neal and Elliot Embleton have signed contracts, it gives us a chance to, you know, have that kind of say of how much money we want for them. Whereas, you know, in the past, we've just been, you know, selling our younger players off for, you know, pittance. You know, it actually will make us the model of, we'll probably might have to become a selling club, you know, to get back into the Premier League. We might have to sell some of these prize assets, but we'll get the money to, you know, recycle and, you know, get better players in and bring in the academy players. So it's all just plus for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that's a good point to leave it at. We've went on for long enough. Thanks for joining us, lads. We'll be back, hopefully after crew, with a reaction pod. So go for that. We'll catch you all later. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.